Okay. Hi, my name is Grant Billings. I'm a master's student at Clemson. I'm stationed in Florence at the PD Research and Education Center, and I'm co-advised by Dr. Todd Campbell and Dr. Mike Jones. So the problem I'm going to be talking about today is figuring out a way to more efficiently utilize the resources we have available to us in our breeding program in Florence. So the goals of my master's thesis research, at least the part I'm presenting today, were to assess the genetic diversity in the PD cotton breeding program, evaluate the population structure for the 8 breeding groups within the program, and identify patterns of inheritance in the all the releases or the sampling of the releases throughout the history of the program. So the program has been around in one form or another for over 100 years, formally for about 80 years. And over the history of the program, breeding program in Florence, the breeding objectives have changed. So early on, it was an early maturing Sea Island cotton breeding program. And then over time, it was focused more on improving fiber quality, especially combining longer staple upland cotton with stronger fibers. And then the 60s and 70s and 80s, there was a period of time where the breeders really focused on bringing in sources of insect resistance into the already improved fiber quality lines. And from the 70s to the present, there's largely been a focus on improving genetic diversity, agronomic qualities, and of course, a continued focus on fiber quality. So if you take all of that information and put it together, as Dr. Campbell and coworkers did in 2011, you can kind of see the releases from the program partitioning out into 8 groups. The first 4 groups, which were released in order from group 1 to 4, were really focused on fiber improvement. And then 5 and 6 were really focused on insect resistance. And 7 and 8, which are the most recent groups, were really focused on enriching field performance and combining some of that with the fiber quality traits. So in total, in the study I'm talking about here, we used 96 total genotypes. So the hypothesis of this project was that the underlying population structure of the PD genotypes revealed by genetic data will reflect the changing breeding goals, the sources of breeding material, and the movement of alleles between breeding cycles. So first thing I did was go through and try to extend the pedigrees for these 96 genotypes as far back as I could. So some of those were registered in Crop Science, some of them from the proceedings of this conference. The Mississippi Obsolete Cultivar Bulletin was a really good resource, and some of the more recent ones were in the Journal of Plant Registrations. So after expanding that pedigree that had the 96 genotypes in it back until it had about 400 members, I calculated a measure of relatedness using this program, numeric wear N. It allows you to use roughly sparse pedigrees to calculate relatedness between pairs of genotypes. So most of them were related at about the grandparent level. There are a few down here that were reselections from a single previously released cultivar. And then some of them, as you'll see later, were full siblings from the same cross. So using that information alone, just pedigrees, it can help you stay organized, divide and label different breeding populations, and you can kind of see how phenotypes track across generations. So what I'm going to talk about is adding another component to just the pedigrees, which is the use of genetic markers. We use the Cotton 63K SNP array, and we genotyped 96 of these individuals across the 8 breeding groups. And I'm going to talk about how that information compares with the information we gathered from the pedigrees. So just briefly about the 63K SNP array. The array has 63,000 bead clusters, which in theory can assay 63,000 loci across the genome. You get a A or a T or a C or a G at each locus. So you'll get 2 alleles for each locus, and we use the standard cluster file that was released with the array paper. So of those 63,000 bead clusters I mentioned before, 26,000 of them approximately are known to be polymorphic in hirsutum, upland cotton. And then after filtering, we're left with about 18,000 markers, and those are just distributed wherever they happen to be across all the hirsutum chromosomes. And then after fitting those using the intraspecific map to a density of one marker per centimorgan, that left us with a second set, which is 1,000 markers. So all the stuff I'm going to talk about from here, we'll be comparing 18,000 unthin marker set with a 1,000 thin set. So this is just the number of new alleles that were introduced in each group. So I treated like group one was the one that came first, then group two, and so on. I looked to see if each marker allele had been introduced yet into the program. So as you can see, most of the diversity in terms of alleles was introduced early on in the program in group one. And so that's just to show in a program such as this, where it's largely a closed breeding program, most of the diversity was introduced at the beginning, and it was shuffled up likely. This is showing the number of alleles that are unique to each group. So group 7 and 8, looking at the unthinned or thin sets, are the only ones that have alleles that are not present in any other group, which makes sense. They were introduced much later in the program. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the genetic diversity within each group. So this is a pairwise genetic distance, the average for each number of within group comparisons. So a higher number here indicates that the two genotypes being compared are more similar in terms of SNPs. Group one showed the smallest amount of variation. That was the first group in the breeding program, and a lot of them were progeny of very similar crosses, though they came from the same material. And otherwise, usually within group comparisons, the genotypes are more similar to each other than if you look between groups, which is what the dashed line represents. And you see the same thing whether you look at the untrimmed or the trim sets or the thin sets. So this is just comparing that. For the unthinned and thin sets, looking at the correlation between the pedigree-based measure of similarity and the SNP-based measure of similarity. And so that they're not very predictive of each other, as you can see with the R-squared here. But using the thin set of SNPs, it's a little more closely predictive, I guess, of what we'd see from the pedigrees. So the conclusion here is that the thin marker set more closely reflects our expectations from the pedigree-based estimates of differences between the genotypes. So this is a principal component analysis. It's a dimensional reduction technique we use to look for groups. So we're just looking to see if the SNP data supports the original group assignments. And so if you just look at the unthinned SNP set, which again has 18,000 markers, you see a lot of separation in PC1, but not very much in PC2. There are a few outliers, but you can't really see definite grouping between genotypes that are members of the same breeding group. But when you use the smaller set, you can see a lot more of the earlier released groups cluster together. So you have 1, 2, 3, and 4 kind of up here. And then you can see the 5 and 6, those are the insect resistance groups grouped together over here. And then some of the newer materials kind of at the intersection of those two. So here's structure analysis. I think we've seen this a few times this morning already. They're sorted by the breeding group number, each individual is. And there isn't really strong distinction here between groups. You can kind of see sort of differences with 5 and 6, but largely there's a lot of shuffling between the groups. There isn't really any complete separation. But the number of subpopulations is likely 8 or 7. Okay, so next thing I'm going to talk about a little bit is the allele tracking. So this is just showing all of the homozygous differences between two of the parents used in this cross, PD695 and PD875. And this is showing all the progeny that we genotype. These are other released breeding lines. As you can see, this is chromosome 1. Most of the alleles that you can see came from PD695. So that just shows in this cross, there's probably some trait on chromosome 1 the breeder was selecting for when generating these lines. If you look at another chromosome, this is chromosome 3. Oh, and the yellow is the ones that are heterozygous. So they have one allele from 695 and one from 875. And here you can see there's a lot more mixing up between the two. It's not as dominant with PD695 as the chromosome 1 was. So using this information, I've overlaid a phenotype. This is just Frego Brack. This comes from the release papers for each of these breeding lines. And I guess you could use this information to see, okay, can you track a trait throughout the tree and the history of the program? All right, so the conclusions, the pedigrees provide some but not all information about the genetic differences between cultivars, which makes sense. There's a lot of selection going on when generating a new release, so we wouldn't expect the pedigrees to correlate perfectly. The thin SNP set reflects our expectations from the pedigrees the best, which was what I showed earlier. The PCA shows some clustering between groups with large overlaps, however, but groups 5 and 6 kind of seem to separate out on their own, and this is likely a weakly structured population. We can't really see perfect separation between groups. So how is this helpful for us in our breeding program? It can help us improve records by figuring out potentially which parent was present during a reselection for an off type, finding outcrosses in pedigreed lines, and generating list of the genetic differences between different genotypes. We can identify moments in the past, hopefully, where certain linkage on chromosomes were broken up, and we were able to combine traits together and trace back sources of genetic variation to where they came from. And then we, hopefully in the future, will be able to mine for beneficial markers and locate alleles that are beneficial in the South Carolina environment and establish the basis, hopefully, for genomic prediction eventually in the PD program. So I'd like to thank my committee, especially Dr. Jones and Dr. Campbell, my co-advisors, and I'd like to thank Amanda, especially with helping me early on this project. And I'd like to thank Cotton Incorporated for providing the funding for my research. Thank you.